Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. Coming up this hour of the program, last Thursday, 18-year-old Rutgers University freshman Tyler Clementi jumped from the George Washington Bridge after his roommate and an accomplice allegedly streamed a video tape of Clementi engaging in sexual activities with another male on the internet. He left an ominous and heartbreaking goodbye message on his Facebook profile before leaping to his death. His body was recovered several days later. There have been many other suicides, a string of them, over the last few weeks. Asher Brown, 13 years old, of Houston, Texas, shot himself in the head September 23rd. Seth Walsh, 13 years old, in California, hung himself September 19th, and died after 19 days on life support. Billy Lucas, 15, of Greensburg, Indiana, hung himself September 9. Justin Auberg, 15, of Minnesota, hung himself July 9. All were the subject of repeated anti-gay bullying, according to reports from friends and family. This hour of the program, we will have two guests with us. Michael LaSalas, director of the Master in Social Work program and associate professor of the School of Social Work at Rutgers University. He is author of Coming Out, Coming Home, Helping Families Adjust to a Gay or a Lesbian Child. And he has a blog as well, Gay and Lesbian Wellbeing, which runs in Psychology Today. Later this hour, Dan Savage will join us, a nationally syndicated columnist, author of The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family, and The Kid, What Happened After My Boyfriend and I Decided to Go Get Pregnant. He is the creator of the It Gets Better Project, which includes gay and lesbian couples who are videotaping their experiences as adults now, and with a very strong message, you will get through this. Eventually, it does get better. But why is it so bad for so many teens now? We'll be welcoming phone calls for both our guests, for Michael and later for Dan. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Michael, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. You join us from Rutgers University, where it's been a very difficult week, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes. There's really a pall over campus, and many of us, I'd say all of us, are very, very saddened and upset by what has happened.
Yeah. Is this a story, Michael? This particular suicide received a great deal of attention. Some of the others I mentioned did not receive as much. Is this a story that we've just been ignoring? Because when you look at the numbers of teens who have committed suicide, it's quite large.
I think you're right. I think that in some ways we have been ignoring it. While it's difficult to know how many gay and lesbian youth commit suicide, because it's a hidden population, not everybody identifies, and also once they commit suicide, we don't know their sexual orientation. But it's something that's been going on for a while. We've known, those of us in the field have known, that these kids face a 2 to 3 times higher risk of suicide than their heterosexual counterparts. And yes, it's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. You would have thought that there would be much more acceptance of gay and lesbian and transgendered and bisexual people in this country. We are in a different era, and yet something is persisting. Why is that, that kind of discrimination?
Well, excuse me. I would say that while we have made a lot of progress in terms of tolerance for gays and lesbians, we've still got a ways to go. We still, at higher levels of society, our religious leaders, our political leaders, still send out messages that it's not okay. And this is operationalized through our recent debates on Don't Ask, Don't Tell and same-sex marriage, and also debates about whether there should be anti-gay bullying programs in our schools. There are factions of our population who believe, or political factions and religious factions who believe, that talking about anti-gay bullying in our schools is a way to promote a, you know, a gay lifestyle, or is part of a gay political agenda, and that's just wrong. But all of these ideas, I think, contribute still to the negative perception of gays and lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
I read recently somebody on who responded to a post on my blog said that when gay and lesbian people are juxtaposed in terms of, you know, against marriage or against the family, like it's, if it's believed that if people are saying that if you're gay, you know, gay and lesbian rights somehow goes against the family, it gives bullies the idea that it's acceptable and okay to stigmatize these kids. And so I think there's some credence to that.
Right. The roommate and the accomplice, how they are treated, will that make a difference if these allegations against them, if it's proven that they videotaped this and that there was malice involved, does it make a difference in terms of setting a standard, what kind of sentence they get in terms of whether or not it's a hate crime, in terms of they are accomplice to murder? What do you think of the charges, potential charges, and the statement that will be made?
Well, we do have hate crimes legislation that covers crimes against people for sexual orientation in New Jersey. Of course, I have to preface what I say with the fact that I'm not an attorney, but I do know we have that legislation. And my understanding, I don't have intimate understanding of this case, but my understanding is that it's being looked into as to whether this is a hate crime or not. What I can say is that I think the silver lining, if there is one in all of this, it's getting people, I think, across the country and in various parts of the world to look at and to consider that these social media outlets, which can do a lot of good, can also do a lot of harm. I am concerned, though, that the discussion around this crime has been mostly revolving around the issues of civility, social media, et cetera, and that the anti-gay component is somewhat played down. So, and I hope to see that being brought out more. This really is, while it's an example of an abuse of social media and cruelty and incivility, it's also, in my mind, an example of anti-gay bullying, and in fact, anti-gay bashing.
Right. It's hard to read it any other way, isn't it?
Well, you know, my read on a lot of the media coverage has been that hasn't been really brought out as much as, look how social media can be misused, and it was misused in a cruel way, and we have to be careful about this, that kind of thing, without looking at the issue of anti-gay bullying.
Right. So it would make a difference then if whether or not they are charged with a hate crime here in addition to violating the state's invasion of privacy laws.
Yes. I think that would, if that's your original question, I think that would send out an important message.
Right. I read the number of young teens who had committed suicide in various parts of the country just in the last couple months. And I was struck by their ages, the ages of many of these people. They're middle school students or they're high school students, or they, in many cases, have just started college. Is this a particularly vulnerable age?
For gay and lesbian, I think it's a particularly vulnerable age, period. But for gay and lesbian youth, I think it is even more so. In my own research, in my own clinical experience, I also see gay and lesbian youth and adults and their families. My experience as a clinician and as a researcher, what I've learned from that is that when these kids are bullied, and many, many of them are bullied and harassed, often because they show signs of cross-gendered behavior or some sign that the other kids pick up that this may be a gay or lesbian kid, when they're bullied for this, when they're taunted, when they're physically assaulted, they're verbally taunted, etc., this can leave lasting wounds psychologically on these kids. And in my practice, I see many people who are still suffering from these wounds. And so I think that these experiences really leave these kids vulnerable. And this vulnerability lasts into adulthood. I mean, what happens is these kids may, you know, the other kids pick up something different. They may call this kid, you know, faggot or queer or something. And what's so disturbing is that these kids, they know they feel different, but they don't really know what it is. So they're hearing about what it means to be gay from their tormentors. So imagine the initial lesson that they're learning about being gay or being lesbian. And of course, it's an extremely negative one. And then imagine figuring out that that's you. So there's a lot of psychological heavy lifting that needs to be done once a person realizes they're gay. And it's difficult for some people to come to terms with it because of those reasons.
Mm-hmm. What about what schools are doing in the case of Osher Brown, the 13-year-old who recently committed suicide, shot himself in a bedroom closet after coming out to his parents as gay? Brown, I'm reading from the Chicago Tribune story, whose parents had suspected his orientation, confided in his parents that he had been bullied at school. His parents say a bully knocked him down a flight of stairs twice at school. Parents said they tried time and time again to alert the school that the bullying was taking place on campus, and both parents said that the school did nothing. Is that a common story when it comes to bullying?
I'm afraid it's not uncommon. In the research respondents that I spoke to for my book, as well as among my clients, they often tell stories about teachers, administrators who turn their heads. I've also, in my own work with schools, heard of incidents where school officials, even counselors, have said to kids, well, if you didn't act that way, you wouldn't be the object of this. Other kids wouldn't make fun of you. Maybe you should act more masculine if you're a boy. You shouldn't walk that way. You shouldn't talk that way. Or maybe you should act more feminine and wear dresses if you're a girl. So what that does is, of course, put the onus of the victimization onto the victim, blaming the victim, if you will. And, and of course, that's not a solution to this.
We are going to welcome phone calls for Dr. Michael LaSala. He is director of the Master of Social Worker Program and associate professor in the School of Social Work at Rutgers University, which, of course, many of the people there are mourning this week after the horrendous incident last Thursday when the 18-year-old Rutgers University freshman, very accomplished musician, Tyler Clemente, jumped from the George Washington Bridge after his roommate and an accomplice allegedly streamed a videotape of Clemente engaging in sexual activities with another male. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Michael is author of Coming Out, Coming Home, Helping Families Adjust to a Gay or Lesbian Child, and he also has a blog, Gay and Lesbian Wellbeing, which runs in Psychology Today. To your phone calls in a moment, and your emails at talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, Julian Zelizer will be with us, professor of history at Princeton University, and he's written a lot of things, but his latest book is titled simply Jimmy Carter. All right, let's go to phone calls. Sam from Milwaukee is our first caller. Michael, hi, Sam.
Hi, morning, actually. I am a straight male member of the Gay Straight Alliance, and I went to Pride Fest this year with a group of my friends, and Patti LaBelle was there, and it was honestly one of the single most rewarding experiences of my entire life so far. And also, I'd like to also comment, I don't know how to say this, on the suicide, I would be there for somebody who's in trouble, and I think it's important for these kids to know that there are people out there that fight for them, too. I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Michael?
I think that's just terrific. I myself am a gay man, and I've been out for about 30 years, and what warms my heart is to see more and more heterosexual people not only tolerant but also willing to stand up and support gay people to do the right thing and to identify themselves as resources. I think that's just terrific, and I hope this guy puts himself out there in a way that gay youth or anybody who's troubled, who's gay or lesbian, can reach out to him.
What about resources? Are there well-publicized resources for young people who find themselves being bullied, being troubled, being depressed, being suicidal?
I think we need to do a lot better job on this. My understanding is there are resources online, chat rooms, etc., that tend to be sort of catch as catch can, and I think we all need to do a better job developing them more and developing clearinghouses for these kids.
Thanks, Tim, for the call. Eric in Madison. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I think it's a terrible, terrible situation for the young children today in school, whether they're gay or straight. I believe the suicide rate is up in both categories. It's the bullying situation, I believe, is a big attribute to it, and we really need to take a look at what's going on in our school system, from the teachers to the upper level.
What should schools be doing? It seems to me, after all these stories, that all schools ought to be instituting some kinds of programs concerning bullying, and particularly special programs for gay and lesbian students.
Well, here's my take on that. In my research, I found that kids who went to high schools where there was an LGBT youth group, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, youth group of some sort in the school, or a chapter of GLSEN, which is the Gay Straight Education Alliance. If these schools had these programs, the kids complained much less about bullying. I think even if they didn't go to these programs, even if they didn't go to these meetings, I think when you have these programs in the school and they're publicized, the school sends a message to the students, and the students get it, that it's not acceptable
right, to
pick on somebody who's gay or lesbian. I think that's certainly one thing that we need to do. I think the second thing is we're being extremely neglectful if we're talking about anti-bullying and not talking about the homophobic or heterocentric, if you will, aspects to it. Go to a school playground where boys are playing with each other, and the way they put themselves down, usually revolves around some kind of anti-gay epithet, some kind of, you're a fag, you're a sissy, and some of it gets graphic in terms of sexuality. So I think there needs to be, when there is an anti-bullying curriculum, there also needs to be discussion around tolerance, around gay issues, and a discussion of that. But school districts, I understand, have to be very brave to do that, or else it's going to look like they are somehow promoting some kind of gay lifestyle, which, of course, is wrong. But if they're going to, I think, do the right thing, that's what they're up against.
Right. Well, tolerance, you simply have to learn tolerance to be a good human being. You just have to learn it.
Right, right. And no matter what you think of gay and lesbian people, you have to take a stand that bullying,
right,
bullying kids for being gay or suspecting that they're gay is just wrong.
Right. Here's an email from John in Milwaukee. Cody J. Barker, 17, of Shiocton, Wisconsin, took his life on September 13th. He attended Shiocton High School, where he was active in choir. In August, he attended a seminar and planned to start a gay-straight alliance at his school. He had a job at Fleet Farm in Appleton. He came out of the closet but was having a tough time from treatment at peers at the high school. His story has not received national attention, but I think it's important that we recognize that these things don't just happen in other parts of the country, but right in our own backyard.
Very important point. Very, yes, tragic story, but a very important point.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric, for the call. Let's go to Mary from Brookfield. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. My question for your guest is, where does he feel that the kids are getting these attitudes? Are they from the parents or other adults?
I think they're getting it perhaps from their parents and from other adults, as well as our society. I mean, look at the discourse around this issue, around gay and lesbian issues. Look at our major religions in this country and what they say about gay and lesbian people. You can't tell me that those ideas don't sink down to the ground level, you know, from the top to the ground level, and influence kids and make people feel like, and kids understand that it's not okay to be gay, and that if you are gay, you deserve to be an object of abuse, of harassment, etc. I think you can translate those messages from the top right on down to the level of kids in a high school.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard for you to be gay as a teenager?
Oh, yes. Now, I am 51 years old, and I came out at 19. And so I was also harassed and bullied through school, and that was very difficult to get through. And if only I had a place to turn to, it would have made my life a lot easier. Dan Savage's YouTube video, which is terrific, letting kids know you can get through this. You know, the world, high school eventually ends, and you can get through it. Fortunately, after high school, I went to a college that was very tolerant, and that helped me a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
Kurt Cobain, the musician, the lyrics in one of his songs says that everyone is gay, and he wound up with it. He killed himself 26 years ago. But he's now the wealthiest dead composer. His songs are played all over the world. The word faggot, F-A-G-G-O-T, comes from the Latin word fugare, which means to burn. And the faggot was the stick that the priest would use when they would light gay men on fire. They actually burned people to death alive at the stake. And then before that, in Israel, the early eccentric Jews would stone them to death. They would bury them alive up to their neck and then kill them with rocks until they were dead. Now, the Romans didn't do that. The Romans were gay bisexual men, and they were proud of it. They built gay baths wherever they went. And even in Jesus' time, there were gay baths. But what I wanted to say, I feel very sorry for these young kids, because the whole concept of gay and straight, the no-name study says that all men are bisexual by nature, biology, strategic survival, and God's design for human being. And for 6 million years, the same sex was a vital way of survival. And then when the religion came along, it changed the whole thing, because, well, we didn't have separation of church and state.
Michael.
Well, I think this caller brings up several very important points. Number one is the importance of language, that we banter around these terms without really fully understanding their meaning and their impact. And I've heard that same definition of the word faggot. In addition, what I would add to that is the way kids are and young people are using the term gay to mean something corny or stupid or something like that. And we create our reality by our language. I think Michel Foucault was one of the people who put forth that idea, and I think it's very valid. And so by using these terms, we're creating a reality that certainly is oppressive for gay kids. You know, what if a gay kid who's struggling with this hears those terms? What is the impact on that kid? We can't overestimate the negative impact of hearing these things banter around, on these gay and lesbian youth. I also want to add, too, I know a little bit about the history, the historical and religious issues. It seems that it's really Judeo-Christian traditions that have stigmatized homosexuality and tried to stamp it out. Many indigenous religions, it's perfectly acceptable, And as a matter of fact, among certain Native American tribes during the colonial and pre-colonial era, it was considered a badge of honor to be not only gay, but to show cross-gendered behaviors. So, we have to recognize that it hasn't been oppressed in all circles throughout all history.
Dr. LaSella, thank you so much for being with us. Oh, you're with us the whole hour. I'm sorry, I didn't know that. I got there. Well, I'm glad I don't have to say goodbye to you.
All right. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Great. We're just adding another guest of the program. Dan Savage is joining us. Dan is a nationally syndicated columnist. He's author of The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family and the Kid, What Happened After My Boyfriend and I Decided to Go Get Pregnant. He is the creator of the It Gets Better Project, which has been receiving a great deal of attention, of course, in the last week or so after the death of the Rutgers University freshman last week. Dan, thank you so much for joining our conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Do you know Michael?
I've read of him. I've read his stuff. Hey, Michael.
Hey, right. How are you? You're like one of my heroes, so nice to talk to you.
What, he's your hero? Why is that, Michael?
Yes, I think that video is just terrific.
Yeah.
And I did follow, I hope I have the same person, I did follow your column in the Village Voice.
Yeah, that's my column.
Yeah, just terrific. Very enlightening and great.
So how do you let people know when they're 15 years old, Dan, that it does get better?
Well, I read about Billy Lucas' suicide after reading about Justin Aberg's suicide, and my reaction was the reaction we always have, which is, God, I wish I could have talked to that kid for 5 minutes and been able to tell him it gets better, because when a 15-year-old takes his life, I think under those circumstances, it's because he can't picture a future that has enough joy in it or family or happiness to stick around for and tough out really what is the worst period in many young gay people's lives. And it occurred to me, that I would never be invited to speak to this kid. All of these suicides have been, except for the Rutgers one, in rural areas, very small towns, where kids are likely to be in a school full of homophobic bullies, where the administrators are also homophobic bullies, going home to parents who are homophobic, dragged off to churches on Sunday for more homophobic bullying from the pulpit. I would never be invited. I would never be given permission to speak to these kids. And it just occurred to me that in the era of Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and digital video, I didn't need to wait for an invitation or permission anymore, and that I could sit down and speak directly to the camera and put it up online. And my boyfriend and I created this channel in the hopes that other people would also create videos, and the response has been completely overwhelming. We have 600 videos
up now. Oh, my gosh.
And more, and we have probably a couple hundred that we're waiting to review before we put them on the channel, and we've worked ourselves into the flu, both of us. And what's most gratifying now is, one of the fears was it would just be adults talking to adults, telling their stories. And not just the bullying. We didn't want people just to talk about the bullying. Kids know what it's like to be bullied. They're going through that right now. When kids have hope for their futures, talk about your current, present life and how much joy and pleasure and happiness are in it. And what's really gratifying is I'm getting letters every day from the mothers and fathers of bullied 13, 14, 15-year-old kids who are gay or perceived to be gay, who are sitting down with their kids in front of the computer and watching these videos with their kids.
Oh, that must give you so much satisfaction. What about when you were a teenager, Dan? You talk about being vulnerable at that age. Was it rough for you as it was rough for Michael?
Yeah, it was rough for me. My parents were evangelical Catholics. My dad was a deacon in the Catholic Church, one of the first of the permanent lay diaconate. My mom was a Catholic lay minister. They ran Catholic Marriage Encounter in Illinois. And, I was sent to Catholic schools where I was bullied, not nearly as severely as my partner was bullied in his fundamentalist Christian schools. And I came home to parents who, I thought loved me, but I doubted it because they didn't know me. Mm. And I knew that they disapproved of homosexuals and homosexuality. And so every day after I hit puberty, I lived with, they say they love me, but they don't mean it because they don't know me. And I feared my siblings, and I feared my friends, and I was very isolated, alone. But one of the things I think all these suicides are waking us up to, us grown-up gays, is it's actually gotten worse for young gay kids in rural and suburban areas. We've had a 15-year anti-gay hate campaign waged by the religious right of dehumanizing rhetoric, of advancing bigotry, claiming gays and lesbians are trying to destroy the family, destroy the institution of marriage. In a town like Greensburg or Stoiken, Wisconsin, where Cody Barker, 17 years old, committed suicide on September 13th, you know, mom and dad and pastor down at your local megachurch can only brutalize gays and lesbians at the ballot box because there aren't any gays and lesbians who are adults who are out. But their kids, their straight kids, steeped in this anti-gay rhetoric, are exposed to it at home, coming out of mom and dad's mouth, on Christian hate radio, at their church on Sunday. And then these kids, they go to school, and there's a 13-year-old gay kid. And what do they do?
Oh.
How are they going to treat that kid after listening to what their parents had to say?
Right. And you don't think about, sometimes I think, and shame on me for thinking this, that we've understood this a little better in our society. And yet when you say that is a striking statement, Michael, that things have only gotten worse. Woo, what reality am I living in? I'm thinking things are better.
That was Dan's statement.
Dan's statement, right.
Yeah, well, things are getting worse in the small towns, rural areas, places where people are really isolated and alone. You can't have this kind of vicious, hateful rhetoric sloshing around without there being consequences. And, you know, Tony Perkins and Maggie Gallagher and these professional anti-gay bigots would have us believe that homosexuality is a choice, that it was, that Seth, who is 13 years old in a small town in California, and Asher, 13 years old in a small town in Texas, that they willfully chose to be sinners, to be gay, and it made them so unhappy, this choice, that they killed themselves rather than change back.
Yeah.
They have blood on their hands, Tony Perkins, the American Family Association, Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, the National Organization for Marriage. We're reaching a moment in our culture where we have to choose between anti-gay rhetoric and live children. And the religious right prefers dead gay children because it's a victory for them rhetorically. They argue that the gay lifestyle, the gay teenagers are four times likely to commit suicide because there's something wrong with the gay lifestyle. You know what? There's something wrong with the way gay teenagers are bullied and harassed. They, you know, a straight teenager who's bullied and harassed goes home to parents who are straight, who are on their side, a shoulder to cry on. The gay teenager all too often goes home to more bullying from mom and dad, and then they're dragged to a church on Sunday for more bullying from their quote-unquote spiritual leaders. And you wonder why the gay suicide rate is higher
it's
for
so high.
Teenagers.
Right.
Can I add something?
Yeah, of course, Michael.
A couple of things, too. I think what happened at Rutgers demonstrates, and there's I think what it also demonstrates is that even in parts of the country which are thought to be liberal, which are thought to be progressive, things are not all rosy. I have a caseload of adults and kids who are still struggling with their sexual orientation and who live in the backyard of New York City, which is arguably sort of the, you know, the epicenter of the gay rights movement, et cetera. So I just want to put in, I think it's extremely, the isolation that kids have to deal with in rural areas is extremely stressful. I think all areas of the country need to take a look at this and not just assume. I mean, I've had colleagues who thought, really, here in New Jersey, so close to New York City, kids are having trouble with this, and I think that it absolutely is true. There was another, there's another comment I had. Oh, sometimes these, in my own experience as a clinician, as a researcher, I've found not only will parents, you know, these kids are bullied in school and then they come home, and some may be bullied at home by their parents, but what also can happen is these kids isolate themselves. They don't come out to their parents. I've talked to kids and adults who've been through this and say, well, what stopped you from going to your parents or somebody? Say, well, then my parents would know I was gay. And I wasn't even sure myself. So these kids isolate themselves, sort of suppress themselves, keep themselves alone and isolated, for lack of a better word. And that in and of itself can also be stressful.
Can I share a story?
Yes, of course, Dan.
After doing another radio interview about this project, got an email from a woman who. The host of the show got an email she shared with me from a woman who was listening to the show in her car with her son, who got very, very quiet while the discussion of anti-gay bullying was going on, and we were talking about the It Gets Better project. And the mother had suspicions that her son might be gay. He hadn't had any girlfriends or shown much interest, but he hadn't said anything, and she was respecting his privacy and waiting for him to be ready to come out. And so she sat in the front seat, and when the show was over, she said, "That's so sad about what happened to those boys." And if, you know, I think it's really important that you know that if you were gay, I would love you just the same. And the kid burst into tears because he wanted to tell his parents, and he was afraid to. Mm. And it turned out that he was getting viciously bullied at school and hadn't been able to go to his parents for help because he was afraid they would reject him.
Mm.
They did. And, you know, sometimes straight parents, they have their suspicions, but they hang back. They don't want to, you know, out their kids to themselves or, you know, bring this to their kids. But as we're seeing increasingly, it could be a matter of life and death. If you think your kid might be gay and you think your kid might think you're not supportive, you need to say something to your kid. You need to let them know that you are on their side and you will support them, gay or straight. Or you could be facing the tragic consequences that some other families have faced.
Mm. Let's go to some phone calls. Barbara in Madison. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Kathleen. This is Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton.
Oh.
You raised a question earlier about what we could do in terms of policy and the state's role in this. And I wanted to point to a couple of things. One is just this year, a few months ago, the Department of Justice used Title IX to enforce protection of gay children in the school, which I found very interesting and important. And I have long felt that we have under-enforced the protections of Title IX, which means that not only do you have equal rights to get onto a sports field, but you are free to, that you should be able to study free of any sexual harassment. And in the state of Wisconsin, we did hold an LGBT youth conference this year. The Lieutenant Governor's LGBT youth conference that was co-sponsored by Diverse and Resilient and G-Safe Schools and DPI. And we're working to make sure that there is strong leadership to make sure that this continues, because we brought children and parents and school administrators and faculty and social workers and law enforcement together to talk about what we must do, what we need to do to be sure that our children are safe and
yes,
can realize their potential free of bullying and harassment.
Yes, I'm so glad you called in and we're listening. This is Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor, Michael, who happened to be listening to the show. So Wisconsin seems to be on the right path.
It certainly sounds that way.
Dan?
Yeah, one thing.
Yeah, sure.
The DPI sends out a questionnaire to schools to identify at-risk children and try and get numbers. And we're only just beginning to convince them that they need to have questions on that are answered to identify children who self-identify as gay or lesbian, because if we don't have a sense of the number of those children, we can't attract resources and we can't direct adequate programming to them.
Dan, you want to respond to this?
Well, I think that's very important. You know, some people have said about the YouTube videos that they don't solve the problem. We need safe schools legislation. We need anti-bullying programs. We need parents to ask themselves if they'd rather have a gay child or a dead child, and then hopefully pick a gay child over a dead child if they think your child might be gay. And I applaud the Lieutenant Governor for calling in and for talking about the legislative side and the responsibility of the whole society to look after these kids and look out for them. You know, I've heard from people who are gay whose parents raised the issue with their school administrators, and were told there are no gay children in this school. Mm-hmm. If there's more than 25 children in a school, somebody's gay in that school. They're just not out yet. And if there's a climate of bullying and harassment and intolerance, the consequences could be deadly.
There are no gay children in the school. Isn't that something? Yeah, that is amazing. Anything else from you, Lieutenant Governor?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Program. It's incredibly important.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it. Oh, my. Let's go to Bonnie from Stoughton. Hi, Bonnie.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Bonnie Augusta. I'm the former gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and questioning resource teacher for Madison Schools.
Oh.
So certainly have some opinions and feelings about all of this issue. And so I greatly, greatly appreciate the show today. And I almost wish we were doing this when more students could be hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
One of my concerns is one of the things that the media does in trying to be fair in any reporting around this issue is that they go to an extreme to show what they consider to be both sides. And
yes,
oftentimes they
agree.
Have to dig pretty deep
mm-hmm.
to get the other side. And what is the other side of bullying and schools being unsafe? In my mind, there is no other side. So, you know, I see, you know, a difficulty, a problem with that in giving voice to some of the very negative things that our young people need to hear through the media.
Well, that's a very interesting question. Let's go to Dan first on this, and then I'd like to hear from Michael. I think you're absolutely right that the press feels as though they have to give, for religious reasons or whatever, this we don't believe in homosexuality. There's a gay agenda, which, of course, we've heard that phrase from many people. How do you deal with that, Dan? Because tolerance really is the issue here. It's whether,
well,
yeah.
The religious right has conned us into believing that tolerance means we must be tolerant of intolerance. We reached a tipping point once in the debate over race in this country. I am actually old enough. I'm 45, and I was a weird little kid who used to watch public affairs television when I was a child. I'm old enough to remember when you could go on TV and be treated as a respected member of the community and a reasonable person and argue for segregation, argue against interracial marriage.
Yes, right.
Argue for racist policies and racist discrimination. And we reached a tipping point where the society said those are no longer positions that reasonable people can hold or that will be entertained in the public arena. And we must reach that tipping point with homosexuality. And I understand that some people have religious objections, but we are going to reach a point where we're going to have to ignore the baloney in the Bible about homosexuality the same way we ignore the baloney in the Bible about murdering women who aren't virgins on their wedding night. We ignore the baloney in the Bible about shellfish, about polycotton blends, about murdering your children if they're disobedient, the stuff in the Bible that's pro-slavery. So people who lean on their religious beliefs to justify their anti-gay bigotry, we're going to have to reach a point where that's not good enough
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
I would also add to that, you know, just like they ignore working on the Sabbath, cutting your hair in a certain way. I mean, the Bible has all sorts of ideas that are ignored by these people. I think, too, especially, I think it is particularly heinous to hear these groups come out against anti-gay bullying. By saying that this is somehow promoting some kind of agenda or this is a political agenda, et cetera. When I hear those comments, I think either these people are incredibly ignorant or incredibly cruel. And we have to call it for what it is. As Dan has put so eloquently, you know, kids are dying because of this. And sooner or later, we're going to have to get to a point where we're not going to tolerate intolerance, even in the name of religious freedom. Just
mm-hmm.
not okay.
Mm-hmm. Bonnie, did you have a follow-up?
For me?
Sure.
Yes. In fact, actually two, if that's okay.
Okay.
I want to reiterate what, and I believe it was Dan, who was talking about how hard it is right now for young people. Because for me, coming out was very easy. Nobody was talking about it. And so while I was isolated, I could continue in that isolation and not be feeling all of the attacks. What we're essentially going through now is the process that Gandhi talked about. You know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. Well, we're definitely in that fight situation, but because of it, all of that information is out there and is so hurtful for young people. And then my final point is that, again, reiterating what somebody else said about the isolation, and how important adults are to young people to counter some of the rhetoric that is there. People like Lieutenant Governor Lawton, amazing that she came on the show and spoke and was so very powerful in the conference that was held last year. But teachers are a sense of important adults in young people's lives, and yet it's very, very difficult for them to be out in school. You know, there's a few situations where it is difficult as an adult to be out. Obviously, the military, within religion, within sports arenas and schools. and yet if we could have all of the gay and lesbian and bisexual, transgender adults who are teachers be out, I think it would be amazing to every student in that school,
yes.
not just yes. the gay or lesbian kids.
Yes.
Showing the tolerance and
yeah.
the esteem that GLBT adults can be held in.
Yeah, thank you, Bonnie, so much for your call. Who was jumping in there?
Dan.
All right, Dan, go ahead.
Two things. She's right. You know, even when I was a kid, it was possible as a gay or lesbian teenager to fly under the radar and avoid suspicion because people didn't think so much of homosexuality that it wasn't a constant subject of public debate or public demagoguery from the right. And that was that made it in some ways easier to be a gay teenager 30 years ago than it is to be a gay teenager now.
Hmm. I would also want to add, too, that the agenda of the far right on this is to make us as invisible as possible. There are studies that suggest that even the most homophobic people, once some of them get to know gay people and know that they're real people like anyone else, flesh and blood with real emotions and such, that their level of homophobia goes down. I think if we remove words like gay and lesbian from anti-bullying programs, we avoid showing television shows on public television like, you know, Heather Has Two Mommies or whatever. When the religious right does this, I think the intent is to make us invisible so that, you know, tolerance won't grow. The side effect of this is that kids don't have role models to look up to. I like what the caller said about if teachers could come out, then that they can model not only for the bullies, you know, what's appropriate and what isn't, but also for these kids who feel very isolated. And even kids that I've spoken to who won't go to a gay and lesbian youth group or won't go to a GLSEN meeting, just knowing that it's there gives them
yes,
comfort.
Yes, I'm sure.
Just knowing
I'm
it's,
sure.
it's there gives them comfort and, again, makes their lives visible and lets them know that you can be happy and grow up into a happy and healthy gay person.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we go back to phone calls, Dan, I wanted to be sure to ask you, is there a way that those marvelous YouTube videos are being transmitted to schools, or do you just have to be an individual going to YouTube? How do you access them?
They're at itgetsbetterproject.com, and they're spreading like wildfire over Twitter and Facebook and getting into the schools. I'm hearing from teachers
Great.
All over the country that people are finding their way to them.
Great. And here's an email. Please know that there are churches out there that support our gay brothers and sisters. I travel an hour each way from Hartford to Cross Lutheran Church in Milwaukee because I was looking for a church that was active and vocal in its support of the LGBT community. It's important to me and to the members of my church that our children grow up in a culture that loves rather than judges. Jesus
Agreed.
Never
Agreed.
Preached hate. Yeah. And go ahead, Dan.
I'm sorry. Usually when you have this kind of conversation, you know, we need to qualify Christian with conservative, fundamentalist, evangelical, politicized wing of the Republican Party, Christianity. And then you hear from welcoming Christians, more accepting, tolerant faith traditions saying, oh, you know, we're not all like that. And I know you're not all like that, but the people who need to hear that you're not all like that are the people who've hijacked Christianity, who claim to speak for all Christians, which in America right now are the fundamentalist, conservative wing of the Republican Party, anti-gay, bigoted pseudo-Christians out there. And, you know, you should go tell them that you're not all like that, and you should make a noise in public, not just, you know, come to me when I say the things that I have to say about, oh, you know, whisper in my ear, we're not all like that. I know you're not all like that. My mom was a Christian. My father was a Christian. I consider myself culturally Catholic. I know. Go tell Tony Perkins. Go tell the Pope. Go tell Maggie Gallagher, go tell the American Family Association and the Christian Family Association that not all Christians are anti-gay bigots. They're the ones who need to hear it.
And I want to ask you, too, Michael, how do people access your book and the work that you've been doing?
Well, they can. I have a website. It's www.michaellasala.com, or you can get at it through the title of my book, www.comingouthomecoming.com. You can Google me and get access to all of this. Also, visit me on my blog for Psychology Today. Just go to Psychology Today, the blog section, and look for gay and lesbian well-being.
Okay. And that's what this show is all about, gay and lesbian well-being. Thank you both so much for being with us. Michael, thank you. Continued success in your work. Dan, I'm glad that this YouTube project, It Gets Better, has just exploded for you. It's obvious that it is desperately needed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks to both of our guests. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Our guests, you can Google, Michael said, you spell his last name, capital L-A, capital S-A-L-A, Michael LaSala, director of the Master of Social Work program and associate professor in the School of Social Work at Rutgers University, where they are reeling, many people are, from the death of a student last week. Horrendous story, young musician, and the bullying done by his roommate and an accomplice, Tyler Clementi. But it's only one of several that have taken place, more than several, quite a few suicides that have taken place over the last month or so, including one here in Wisconsin. All right. Thanks to you for listening and for calling in, and we will continue our show following the news.